Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this special edition of Bang the Book Radio for Friday, July 19th. Going to chat about UFC on ESPN4 with a main event of Rafael Dos Anjos and Leon Edwards with Chris Chapina of the Sports Gambling Podcast. 5 days this week, five shows on Bang the Book Radio. If you missed Wednesday's discussion with Brad Powers on college football, in particular the SEC, the ACC, and the Big Ten, definitely want to make sure that you go back and check that out. Great addition to the Bettors Box on Thursday, my MLB betting podcast. And we'll have another one coming up here on Monday of next week as well. Then Tuesday, we'll chat some college football with Rolf Michaels. My college football power ratings, first edition posted over at bangthebook.com to go along with a lot of other great content over there, including Christian's preview here of this UFC on ESPN card. We'll go ahead and bring Chris Chapina of the Sports Gambling Podcast on the program here. Christian, how's it going today, man?
Good, man. We are coming off a wild UFC event last week. I mean, got the ghost of Uriah Faber coming in as, what, a 4-1 underdog, and some really interesting decisions that happened out there. So this one, you know, as we talked about last week, I think this was the last week's card was more of the journeyman fighters kind of scrapping for wins. And this fight card is really more of the well-known names and some, you know, definite exciting fights on this one, specifically in the, you know, kind of main card department. The prelims, there's only seven of them on this one, so it's a little bit top heavy, but the main card certainly should have the casual fans' interest kind of loaded top to bottom here.
Now, one thing I do want to ask you about, we've kind of talked about this before, where you sort of like the boring cards, you sort of like the boring fighters from a betting standpoint, because you like to do the over 2.5 rounds, you like to look at the more technical elements here of the UFC. When you look at this main card, three heavyweight fights, so we know that there's going to be some bombs thrown in those, and the two lightweight fights and the welterweight fight could both have a lot of violence to them as well. So are you finding as many opportunities on this card as you usually would?
I mean, I think that that's, you know, really a good segue into almost the main event, because when you look at this and look, styles make fights, that's the cliche, almost, you know, kind of easy way to say things, but that's really true. And why I focus on the round props is, you know, judging is something that can largely go either way based on what they see and what they like. And as long as you can get it there, I think that it just takes, you know, basically the biggest, you know, version of variance out of it. And when you look at, you know, stylistically, if two guys are two kind of boring, dirty boxers that want to go up against the cage, and just kind of point fight, I think that, you know, there's an opportunity to kind of really make some money in that department, just knowing stylistically how the fight's going to play out, not knowing, you know, which one is going to ultimately, you know, come out on top in the judge's eyes. And so sometimes you get to pay for it a little bit, you know, in the VIG market. But to me, it's just, it really eliminates even more variance when you just want to figure out how, you know, two people match up stylistically, which kind of leads us into the main event here with Rafael Dos Anjos and Leon Edwards. And really, Leon Edwards, to me, is probably the most, I mean, God, at this point, maybe one of the most, you know, amazing fighters in the UFC that nobody knows about. And I don't even want to say nobody knows about, but doesn't get the respect and notoriety he deserves. And he's been calling for a top five opponent for seemingly forever. And enter Rafael Dos Anjos to answer the call at number three. And, you know, Leon Edwards is on a 7-fight win streak at this point. And when you look at the stacked division that he has gone up against and had victories of, you know, Tumanov, Vicente Luque, Cerrone, Gunnar Nelson, you know, this is a guy who is just so well-rounded. And, you know, I always talk about certain guys are kind of one-trick ponies. Certain guys don't do anything great. They do everything good, below average. And he really does everything great in speaking with Leon Edwards. This is a little bit of a tougher matchup for him, for sure. You know, all the experience in the world for Dos Anjos on the other side, and, you know, maybe one of the few welterweights that's even more well-rounded than Leon Edwards. That being said, I just think that Leon Edwards is about to really go on a run here. I don't want to say really go on a run after winning his last seven fights, but this is the opponent that he needs to really jumpstart, you know, his title aspirations and title run. And I think we talked about this, I believe, with what Marshman or the other a couple shows ago, that, you know, desire and that hungriness is something that Dos Anjos, you know, has certainly been good as of late. But Leon Edwards certainly has that X factor of everything in the world to gain. And, you know, truthfully, there's not a lot to be gained for a guy like Rafael Dos Anjos in this fight. So it's a little bit, you know, kind of weird why he would take this one against this guy. But I really think that this one is going to go to a decision, number one. I think that both guys are so incredibly durable, so hard to put away, and they both, you know, have the ability to adapt to the fight that is in front of them. So this should be a gritty decision victory, in my estimation, for Leon Edwards. But again, I think the over rounds prop definitely makes some sense in this department if you don't want to get involved with the judging. But this should be an absolute war back and forth, ending up on the judges' scorecards for maybe a little bit of a controversial and very close decision for Leon Edwards.
You know, one of the things that we talk about why some of these matches are made. And you just sort of touched on it there a little bit with Leon Edwards finally getting a shot against a top five guy here in this division. Dos Anjos coming off of a really nice bounce back performance with the win over Kevin Lee by submission back on May 18th. Edwards fighting in the U.S. for the first time since December 19th, 2015. And that kind of stands out to me a little bit. His other fights coming in England, a couple in the Netherlands, one over in Singapore against Donald Cerrone. But you just mentioned that he's such a talented fighter that a lot of people don't know about. And this isn't a commentary on the popularity of UFC in the U.S. versus around the world, but simply to say that maybe this match was made for a reason with Edwards back in the States against a well-known name as one to kind of strap that proverbial rocket to his back.
You hit the nail on the head, man. You really did. It's a way to get Edwards, you know, in the main event on U.S. soil and really, you know, get him known. And I think that that is ultimately the goal. That is really, look, we've seen this time and time again. Look, narrative isn't everything. If narrative was everything, Eric Anders would have dusted Lyoto Machida, Ronda Rousey would have never lost, and Conor McGregor would have never, you know what I mean? The narrative is, this isn't WWE where things can be scripted perfectly, but, you know, and Uriah Faber last week against Ricky Simon. So there's a lot, you know, it's a cool story to talk about what the UFC wants to happen. But when two men step into the octagon, you know, anything can happen. But that is, in my estimation, why this match was made where it is, you know, in the main event and all that, to really start to get Leon Edwards the momentum that he needs, because he's proven time and time again, he's one of the best fighters on the UFC roster. And, you know, the resume building that, you know, Dos Anjos will, you know, provide him if he's able to have a win, and especially at this kind of short line. Look, this is not a walk in the park showcase fight for Leon Edwards. This is going to be gritty back and forth. He just has everything to gain, while Dos Anjos, you know, ultimately has a lot more to lose.
All right, so as we move on down the card here, we'll talk about the heavyweight fight between Alexei Oleinik and Walt Harris. Harris a minus 155 favorite in this one. Obviously, anytime you get a heavyweight fight, the dog is kind of an attractive starting point just because of, you know, the heavy hands and heavy kicks that these guys throw. How do you see this one? I mean, is Harris deserving of this big of a favorite line?
I mean, you go down and you look at Harris's record, you know what you're getting with this guy. All of his wins ending in knockout, and he's, you know, certainly does have the power to finish Olenek, you know, very quickly in this. This is it's kind of a, you know, bow constrictor as the nickname of Olenek, and this is kind of your striker versus submission artist, you know, grappler, and that's a really unique kind of aspect to Olenek's game, specifically in the heavyweight division. And, you know, Harris has really struggled in the takedown department. He just needs, you know, not to make this one very, very simple, but if, you know, Harris connects, it's going to be via knockout. And I think that, you know, when you look at every win that he has via knockout, I think that you can, it's probably built into the prop market, but, you know, Harris by knockout or Olenek by submission are the two most likely paths to victories. I don't see either guy making it to the judges' scorecard. So maybe if you could find a rogue, you know, 2.5 under, that makes some sense. More likely probably going to be a 1.5. But look, this, you know, stylistically, I don't know that Harris has what it takes to stop the takedowns. And usually I'm always going to favor the grappler when it comes to grappler versus, you know, striker matchup, specifically when it's not more, you know, Harris is by no means more polished or well-rounded. He just has much more power, and it's kind of one hit quit, you know, kill or be killed mentality with him. So being so diverse and knowing Olenek can kind of get this fight to the ground a myriad of different ways, that's really how I see this one kind of playing out, to be honest. So I would really favor the underdog in Olenek at plus 130.
The one question I'll ask you about Olenek here, his 71st professional match, he's 42 years old, just turned 42 towards the tail end of June. When you are a grappler type of guy, and a lot of times, you know, strength plays a role, but a lot of times you're looking at quickness to be able to get that fight down to the mat. At what point in your mind, or if you have fighter power ratings or anything like that, does there come a point as a fighter ages that, you know, you say, maybe he just doesn't have it anymore? I mean, is it results-based? Is it from what you see when you scout? How do you sort of, you know, make that distinction?
Yeah, it kind of goes into the same categories as you can handicap, weight cuts, and there's different times of that. It goes into layoffs and what's actually kind of, going on rather than just the fact that he is 42. But, I mean, you look at Wal Harris, I mean, at 36, he's not exactly a up-and-coming prospect as well. So, look, if this was, Alexei Oleinik in a nightmare stylistic matchup against an up-and-coming, Francis Ngannou, something like that, it's a little bit different. I think, when you go into this, that's 6 years older than Harris. But, is there a large difference from 42 to 36? Experience certainly plays a lot of this, and you look at this, my God, Alexei Oleinik has 45 career submissions professionally. It's absolutely incredible to go along with 8 knockouts and 4 decision victories. Wal Harris, 12 wins in the UFC, or 12 wins professionally, 12 knockouts. So look, I get it. I just, in this specific situation, I think that it's not a huge deal. It's not as if this is a 20-year difference and all that type of stuff. But when we go down further the card, you look at a guy with Arlovsky, that's a little bit of a different story, and it's more about current form. And look, we talked about this with Cerrone when we thought, all those years ago when he was done at his old weight class, age is a lot different than, fight years and all that type of stuff that goes into it. So it's just one thing to keep in mind for sure. But in this particular matchup, it's not a huge deal.
We'll circle back to Arlovsky here in a few minutes, but I want to talk about this Greg Hardy fight as he takes on Juan Adams. Juan Adams, a slight favorite, minus 120 out there. You may find a better price in some other places. And of course, recording this here on Thursday afternoon, some of these lines may move around a little bit. Now, Greg Hardy hasn't officially lost. He was disqualified from a fight against Alan Crowder, but it's not like he's been knocked out. It's not like he's lost a decision, anything like that here in his MMA career. As an amateur 3-0, as a professional 4-1 with that DQ loss, is Juan Adams that big of a step up in class for him?
Yeah, well, look, when you really look at Greg Hardy's really a funny kind of case study in terms when it comes to the UFC. Look, he was given the worst of the worst coming up on, the regional scenes, Ultimate Fighters, Tufts, all that type of stuff. So he fought nobody and he knocked them clean off. It was not competitive. And the UFC did that for one reason, to build him up as a polarizing former NFL star, kind of kicked out of the league. And that's what it is. This, I bet against Hardy in his first fight, and that, was certainly luck, but it's just, nobody deserves just by going into the UFC to be that big of a favorite, especially in the heavyweight division. Now, I know that was very lucky, and you can kind of say what you want about that. This is just the hardest challenge that Hardy's had to date. Now, look, is Juan Adams this, kind of prolific guy? No, it's just based on who Hardy has fought so far is the reason I say that. It's just kind of the best of the worst, if you will. And look, Adams can easily find the shot to, really finish this fight. And he also has a little bit of wrestling that Hardy has not seen. This one is going to be violent, and it is not going to last long. I think the under 1.5 is a great look. I think this fight, either way, both guys are going to walk to the middle of the octagon, and they are going to swing bombs until somebody is knocked out. And so from that perspective, the underdog will always make a little bit of sense. It's a little bit of a, it's basically a pick'em fight right about now. And so, maybe kind of try to arbitrage that, shop around it and find a couple of different looks that way, play some knockout props on both sides, but they're probably really built into that. This one's pretty easy to handicap. It's a coin flip fight. It's going to be a literal walk to the center of the ring fist fight, and first person to fall is, going to be knocked out and lost. And it's really that simple of a fight here.
All right, so we move on here to the first of the lightweight fights we're going to talk about, and that is James Vick and Dan Hooker. And you mentioned this one last week at the tail end of the show when we were sort of looking ahead to this card, kind of looking at the name value on it and also the excitement, the violence factor, all that type of thing. And this was one fight that you really highlighted with Vick and Hooker.
Yeah, this is a great fight. And this is more, maybe more of a purist MMA fight in my estimation, more than, something like the Hardy fight that we just talked about. Both guys were really riding hot, and both guys are desperate to get back into the win column after both of them having their winning streaks snapped. And, Vic was really knocking on the door and had it all going for championship opportunities. And Hooker, on the other end, was also on a 4-fight winning streak, finishing what Ross Pearson, DeCasey, Jim Miller, and I believe Gilbert Burns, in line before meeting Edson Barbosa, who, really took it to him here. So they're both just so well-rounded: knockouts, submissions, decisions. They can win fights so many different ways, and they're really both primarily strikers, but they can both fall back on their wrestling when things don't pan out for them. So this one is really probably my favorite fight of the evening. It's really hard to, you know, gauge this and tell this. I will usually always kind of favor James Vick just because traditionally through the years, he's been somebody that has come in at, you know, some great dog money. He's was really overlooked for a long stretch in time. He's really in with the, you know, kind of gambling community within the UFC. And, you know, I think he even puts out picks every time, from gambling on his Twitter feed. So he's somebody that you really, you know, I root for. And I always kind of take that out as it comes down to it. But this is going to be a really, really close fight. Hooker's power is probably the finishing power a little bit more, but I would really kind of give the striking technical edge to Vic. So it's going to be more of a volume versus power thing on the feet. And wrestling, you know, I think that when you look at this on paper, the slight edge and just about everything does end with Dan Hooker. So this fight is lined appropriately. I think I'm going to probably end up sitting back and watching this one as a fan. But this is really one that is just incredibly interesting, really close, you know, too close to call in my book. But, you know, gun to the head, I'll always go with my guy, James Vick.
All right. I do want to ask you real quickly here about the other lightweight fight on the card. It is on the main card. Alexander Hernandez, Francisco Trinaldo. You know, we've kind of talked up the previous four fights. And I know that you've got thoughts on the Arlovsky-Rothwell fight that we'll talk about here in a second. But does this one just kind of stand out as maybe the weakest of the bunch on the main card?
Yeah, look, Alexander Hernandez is, a little bit polarizing in, you know, some people don't like him. He kind of, didn't abide by, let's say, unwritten MMA rules by what he did against Benil Dariush in his debut, cashing in as, I believe, like, you know, plus 375, plus 400 favorite. He was an absolute killer on the regional scene, and the UFC just gave him a little bit too much too fast with a guy like Cerrone who absolutely humbled him. And, you know, that I feel like I've said this so many times, but the book is out on Cerrone and the book is out on who he loses to. That one was a little bit of a weird matchup though, because traditionally Alexander Hernandez is all about one thing, and that is power, as pressure. So it was a bad matchup for him, but you know, he just didn't have the skills yet to kind of, you know, beat him. And so this one, I think, you know, Hernandez is going to be better off for that Cerrone fight in the long run. You know, I think that if he's able to, again, utilize that pressure against Trinaldo, who's going to be looking to sit back and end this fight via knockout, Hernandez is going to need to lean on his wrestling a little bit more. So the, you know, kind of power, speed, and youth aspect of Alexander Hernandez should be a little bit cut and dry, just too much over three rounds and probably ending in a decision for Hernandez in my book. But yeah, probably definitely the weakest one on that.
All right, so the first heavyweight fight of the night is the first fight of the main card. This whole thing is on ESPN, but this is defined as the start of the main card here. Andre Arlovsky, Ben Rothwell. Rothwell, $1.85 favorite, $1.80, depends on where you're looking out there in the marketplace, at least as of Thursday afternoon when we're recording. Like I said, I know you've got some stronger opinions here on this one, so what are you looking at?
Yeah, you never like to say this, but my favorite fade in the UFC has been Andre Arlovsky. And when you look at this, I don't know why he is dragging, you know, his career out to this point. But here we are, and the guy, you know, my God, one fight in his last four. He has really he is a shell of his former self. He's won two of his last 11 fights. And look, he's still, you know, kind of tough enough to survive and make it to, you know, decisions. I believe he's lost all four, tied to Ivasa, Walt Harris, Augusto Sakai, was probably one of my bigger bets of this year with Sakai against him. Look, he is there for a paycheck at this point. He is there to make as much money as he can on his name value. And this opportunity probably won't arise too many times to get him, fading him under 2-1. I know it's a little bit of a heavy price to pay here. But when you look at 2-11 in his last, it hasn't been as close as the 2-11 would even suggest to be truth. Look, in the prime, this fight would have been great. But when you just look at the current kind of form of a guy like Ben Rothwell, is he, you know, kind of on his last legs as well? Absolutely. But he's 3-2 in his last five. Well, again, just touched on all the struggles of Orlovsky. So 37 going up against the 40-year-old. At least Rothwell was really, competitive in his last fight against Ivanov. And you really can't say that very much against, you know, with Orlovsky in any fight. So really would favor Rothwell at about that minus 180, minus 190 clip. It's just getting in the money while the edge is the greatest. And to be honest, Orlovsky, I don't know how many times left there's going to be to fade him, but I'm going to get it in while I can.
three bantamweight fights, two women's fights, a light heavyweight fight, and a featherweight fight, making up the prelim card here. Seems like in a lot of these cards, we wind up talking a good amount about the prelims because you have some good betting opportunities, find some things that you like. But you and I were talking before we came on the air here that maybe this week's prelim card doesn't really yield a whole lot of profit potential.
Yeah, normally I have at least, you know, one to three, really, picks on the prelims in this card. There's really just not a lot of opportunity. I think it's more so, you know, mostly front loaded on the main card for sure. That's kind of why we spent so much time talking about it instead of, you know, breaking this down a little bit. When you go down the line at these fights, you know, Pennington Aldana are two fighters that I think a lot of fans will know. This Pennington at her best would certainly be an issue for Aldana. She doesn't like pressure. She's looked anything but her best against Aranda May, and the lingering, you know, the Nunes concerns of the post, you know, that's one of my favorite angles to attack is, you know, fading fighters off of title losses. And you can, you know, another fight on this card with Ray Borg was, you know, certainly somebody that I targeted post that as well. And so guys and girls that are both kind of trying to find their footing and what's next for them in their careers after their title fights is, you know, you can kind of see the, you know, their dreams, hopes and aspirations, everything they've worked for has really been, you know, taken away. And so it can be a hard thing to come back from. But there's just really truthfully not a lot on this main card or on the prelim card that I, have a strong opinion on. I think it's a lot of, guys and girls trying to get back on the right tracks, and you just don't know what that current form will be. So I would favor Aldana in that fight, via decision. Think that over is certainly going to be one, nice little parlay piece. I think Ray Borg probably does get back on track after all the issues in and outside of the octagon as well, but not a lot of value when it comes to the preliminary cards on this card.
I guess I will press you for a second on it here. You know, we talk about this fight card having a lot of name value, a lot of names that people know that they're going to be familiar with. On the prelim card, there are a handful of fighters that, you know, maybe we haven't been exposed to too much in the UFC. Any of them, you know, prospects of intrigue?
I think that it's a little bit too soon to, you know, say that. I think that you can learn more from watching a fight and knowing than you can about trying to get ahead of the market sometimes. You look at Jinsu Sun, and, you know, he is a nightmare to put away. And I don't see a way that a guy like Mario Bautista can, you know, get his grinding kind of style, you know, to win a decision victory against him. And so I think that the pressure of Sun is a guy that I'm looking at here. LFA, after being in LFA from Bautista, he, you know, kind of came in on short notice against Corey Sanhagen, I believe, back in January. Survived a flying knee to hit the early takedown and tapped out, you know, kind of soon. So definitely guys that are up and coming. I just don't know. I need to see it before I want to get involved in the marketplace, if that makes sense. So, you know, a couple in that fight as well. But really, man, there's not a ton on here when it comes to kind of the up and coming stuff. It's really, you know, the name value, you know, guys like Sam Alvey out there that people will know for sure. I guess one that does make a little bit of sense to talk about, you know, that Sam Alvey versus Clinton Abreu. Abreu, you know, has a submission victory over Johnny Walker on his resume. And as we have seen, Johnny Walker is a guy that I am incredibly high on and is kind of, you know, on his way up for sure. Abreu, that was, you know, his first trip to the judges' scorecard, submitted 10 guys and knocked out the other four. Abreu is, you know, a top prospect, but this is a little bit of a hard style matchup for him against Smile and Sam Alvey. It really is. His takedown defense is, you know, really been one of the things that he hangs his hat on. And Abreu is, he's much more of a grappler than he is a striker, despite those knockout victories. Those were kind of up and coming on the regional scene. So it's a little bit of a hard one for him when it comes to the style matchup. But Abreu is the prospect to watch out for and one that I'll certainly be watching very, very closely and would favor him to get that win over Sam Alvey.
Well, next week we'll have a pay-per-view card to talk about, UFC 240 in Edmonton. So definitely something for you to look forward to here as we head on into next week. But Christian Pina of the Sports Gambling Podcast, at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A, on Twitter. Great preview over at bangthebook.com for you to check out. Always a treat, Christian. Thank you so much for joining me, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, everybody. Enjoy the fights.
There you go. There's Christian Pina again of the Sports Gambling Podcast, at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A. On Twitter. Coming up on Monday, we'll have another edition of the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast, complete with a Monday mailbag segment. So at Skating Tripods on Twitter or Adam at bangthebook.com via email to send in your questions. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again on Monday.